Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1923 that an ordinance was passed in Michigan that did what? Was it A, forbid singing out of tune, B, forbid whistling on Sundays, C, forbid dancing to the Star-Spangled Banner, or D, forbid dancers from gazing into the eyes of their partners? All reprehensible acts, perhaps, but which one became a law in 1923? And question number two, it was on this very day back in which year that the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, began to manufacture the Victrola? Was that A, 1894, B, 1906, C, 1928, or D, 1940? So what year did the Victrolas roll out? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August 21st. It was on this day back in 1862 that composer Claude Debussy was born. Clair de Lune, among many other of his compositions. 1862 today. And it was 73 years ago today, 1947, that Margaret Truman, U.S. President Truman's daughter, gave her first public performance as a singer. The event was at the Hollywood Bowl and had an audience of 15,000 in attendance. 1947 today. And in country music news, we have this article entitled, The Remarkable History of the Ryman, the Mother Church of Country Music. This is written by Jeremy Burchard, 2017 issue of WideOpenCountry.com. If you're a country fan who has made it to downtown Nashville, Tennessee, chances are you've at least viewed the outside of this gorgeous building. And if you're lucky, you scored tickets to one of the many world-class live music performances inside. Incredibly, many features of the venue remain from its original 19th century function as a church. But the venue you saw underwent a lot of life-saving in order to remain a fixture in music history. The venue survived poor workmanship, urban decay, and even potential explosions to reemerge as one of the country's greatest cultural bastions. Back in the late 1800s, Nashville had a reputation as a wild spot. Thanks to the Cumberland River, travelers could easily gamble and imbibe to their heart's content. Captain Tom Ryman, a well-liked local who happened to make quite a bit of money from that illicit activity, heard the famous Reverend Sam Jones took issue with Nashville's sinful ways. The traveling preacher made a habit of tent revivals, and Ryman planned on showing up at one in town to cause a ruckus. Legend has it Reverend Jones knew Ryman would attend, So he prepared a sermon particularly for him. So deeply moved by his words, Ryman pledged to build the Reverend his own tabernacle so nobody would need to attend a revival under a tent again. Though it officially opened on June the 1st, 1892, Jones also held an impromptu sermon in 1890, with nothing but a foundation and walls outlining the venue. Jones and Ryman became good friends. In 1904, Jones suggested at Ryman's funeral to rename the building in his honor, and the 5,000-plus mourners enthusiastically agreed. Here's a major dose of irony. While the Ryman Auditorium stood tall as a holy place of worship, it was sinking in debt. The building went over cost during construction. To help pay off debts, the Ryman booked speakers, concerts, boxing matches, and other unholy engagements. On June the 5th, 1943, the Ryman Auditorium opened its doors to the Grand Ole Opry, starting its legendary 30-year tenure as the home for America's most famous musical program. That's when the venue really earned its nickname, the Mother Church of Country Music. For many, the Ryman marked the true birthplace of bluegrass music, too. In 1998, the Grand Ole Opry returned to the Ryman for a limited engagement, which continues to this day. The Ryman breathed life into a decaying downtown, turning it once again into a destination for tourists from around the world. And most importantly, shows at the Ryman are a completely surreal experience. They feel holy, even in the most secular of ways. You can't really dance, thanks to the pews, but there's not a bad seat in the house. The sound is phenomenal, and there's a reverence among both audience and performer that makes the Ryman Auditorium unlike any other venue in the world. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, Netflix Wanted an Extended Cinematic Version of Their Iconic Taboon Sound, and Hans Zimmer obliged. This is written by Maddie Shaw Roberts and published in ClassicFM.com on August the 13th, 2020. Ta-dum! Is one of our generation's most iconic sounds. One heard millions of times every single day around the world. Hearing that two-part thump immediately conjures up images of the Netflix homepage and an evening spent scoffing popcorn on the sofa. It's become the gold standard for Sonic brands. Product VP Todd Yellen says of the logo on the 20,000 Hertz podcast, it's immediately recognizable and everyone knows that it means Netflix. But Netflix is growing. Since 2018, the brand has been releasing original films in cinemas, and they found that ta-dum sound felt too rushed for a cinematic setting. They needed a movie mood, a symphonic version of the sound to set people up for a longer experience. So they hired Hans Zimmer. Zimmer, the exceptional brains behind the scores for Inception, Pirates of the Caribbean, and Gladiator, created a 16-second version of the ta-dum, and it sounds completely epic. Go to YouTube to hear the new symphonic ta-dum by Hans Zimmer. He builds up a soaring symphonic theme with tremolo strings and rumbling percussion before dropping the iconic ta-dum right at the end. When hiring someone to extend their sound logo, Netflix wanted a cinematic composer who would not only immediately get what they were trying to achieve, but also retain that iconic ta-dum in the most recognizable way possible. And after working so successfully with Zimmer on the music for Netflix original series, The Crown, the German film giant was their first choice. Ta-dum! Thank you. Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight introduces our jazz music news. It's entitled Round Midnight. It's published in jazzstandards.com. Round Midnight is Thelonious Monk's best-known jazz composition and carries the grand distinction of being the most recorded jazz standards written by any jazz musician. The Monk CD, Best of the Blue Note Years, documents the 1947 group recording of Round Midnight. According to Thomas Fitterling in Thelonious Monk, His Life and Music, Monk wrote Round Midnight when he was just 18 years old. 8 years later, in 1944, at jazz pianist Bud Powell's urging, Cootie Williams and his orchestra recorded the song. In any case, he shares credit for it in terms of copyright. Originally titled Round About Midnight, Monk's composition became the theme song for Williams' orchestra. Jackie Paris introduced it as a vocal in 1949 after Bernie Hentigan added the lyrics. In 1946, Dizzy Gillespie added his famous introduction and cadenza for his big band arrangement, which proved so popular that Monk added it, albeit an altered version, to his own performance. It is now a standard part of the song. Monk first recorded it as a leader on November 21, 1947. A major turning point for Round Midnight for Miles Davis and also for the world of jazz was Davis's show-stopping performance of the song at the 1955 Newport Jazz Festival. This was considered a sort of comeback for Davis, resulting in a contract with Columbia Records and the release of one of the definitive recordings of Round Midnight on his 1956 Roundabout Midnight LP with John Coltrane. Davis's performance at Newport and his subsequent recording played a large part in introducing this song to the jazz public at large. One critic has called it the national anthem of jazz. And in music research and technology, we have this article published in Science, PBS.org, by Laura Strum on the 13th of July, 2016, entitled Culture, Not Biology, Decides the Difference Between Music and Noise. One man's music really is another man's noise, based on a new study from MIT. The researchers found that only cultures previously exposed to Western music formed opinions on consonance and dissonance, an element of music theory that establishes consonant chords as more orally pleasing than dissonant chords. The findings published today in Nature may end long-standing arguments about whether or not musical preference is biological. This has been debated for a very long time. We're talking centuries, said study author Josh McDermott, an MIT cognitive neuroscientist who is focused on how the brain hears and understands music. So many scientists argue biological reasons for consonants, but the music community believes it's a cultural invention. To settle this dispute, McDermott traveled to the Amazonian rainforest to find the Simani tribe, a native Bolivian population with little to no exposure to Western music. McDermott played tribe members several consonant and dissonant vocal and instrumental chords and asked them which one they found most pleasurable. He compared their responses to Bolivian residents in the capital city of La Paz, who had ample access to Western music, rural residents in San Borjas, with limited access to Western music, as well as a group of American musicians and non-musicians. Now, while the Bolivian and American populations preferred consonant over dissonant intervals, the Samani judged dissonant chords as pleasurable as consonant chords. Consonance seems like such a simple phenomena, and in Western music, there's strong supposition that it's biological, McDermott said. But this study suggests culture is more important than many people acknowledge. Delving deeper, McDermott took the Sanami's tribe-owned music, which evolved outside of Western influence, and tweaked it to include dissonant and consonant tones. Again, the tribe showed no preference. The reason, McDermott found, are these harmonies. This tribe doesn't play music in groups, and thus does not create multitonal harmonies. This habit allowed their ear to develop without the predilection for consonants, which is so well established in Western music listeners. While ethnomusicologists and musicians have long argued consonants is culturally socialized, this is the first study to actively apply this theory to a culture that has not been exposed to Western music.
Darling, the door is open to my heart, and I've been hoping that you won't be the one to struggle with the key. We got lots of time to get together if we try.
Neil Young introduces our rock music news. It's an article entitled Review Neil Young's Long Shelved Homegrown, A Missing Link. This is written by Scott Bauer, Associated Press, June the 15th, 2020. Neil Young's Homegrown, finished 45 years ago but not released until now, is the missing link during one of his most productive and creative periods. If it had been released as originally planned, Homegrown would have come out after his smash, Harvest, that includes two of his most loved songs, Heart of Gold and Old Man. The legend and mystique surrounding Homegrown, much like the lost Beach Boys record Smile, only grew. Now, after 50 years, Young is unleashing what he describes as the one that got away. As any Young fan knows, there is far more than just one that got away from the artist known for his mercurial ways, recording, and then shelving projects numerous times over his career. But what to make of Homegrown? It's Young's breakup record. Homegrown features backup players closely associated with Bob Dylan. There's Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm from the band, along with Emmylou Harris on one song. That all combines for a familiar mid-1970s sound for Young, with acoustic guitar and harmonica dominating. Homegrown stands up nearly 50 years later as both a work of art and as filling a gap in Young's storied career. Try, the song playing in the background now, is from that album, Homegrown.
We got lots of time to get together if we try.
Dvorak's Songs My Mother Taught Me introduces our local music news. It's entitled, These Healthcare Workers Turn to Music to Heal. Published in the News and Observer on the 25th of May 2020 by Glenn McDonald. For many people here and around the world, music has been a refuge as the COVID-19 pandemic has taken its toll. For members of the Durham Medical Orchestra, health professionals on the front lines of the crisis, their love of music has powered a remarkably ambitious project.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this month, 40-plus members of DMO collaborated on a premiere performance of The Machine Awakes, a musical piece from Durham composer Stephen Bryant. But instead of introducing it in a concert hall, it had a grand debut in an unconventional way, online. While there may have been less fanfare, the resulting video features a 30-piece orchestra performing together by way of smartphones, webcams, editing software, and 3 weeks of meticulous, exacting collaboration. The final video is a compelling piece of work, a kind of collaborative illusion of musicians performing together, but from dozens of different locations, with many still in their scrubs and uniforms. It's like the coolest Zoom meeting you've ever seen. The Durham Medical Orchestra, founded in 2010, is a full community symphony orchestra open primarily to musicians in the Triangle who work in the health sciences field, doctors, nurses, med school students, and others. The orchestra has hosted dozens of performances over the years, often benefit concerts for charitable causes. The DMO's 2020 spring concert was intended to be a grand 10th anniversary celebration. But as with so many other spring events, the pandemic put the kibosh on that. They soon learned that producing a viral or virtual orchestral performance is as complicated as it sounds. The recording process began with a video of Mossenbichler Bryant conducting the piece solo in her living room, along with a click track, a kind of digital metronome for synchronizing sound recordings. The video was then distributed via email to orchestra members who recorded their own individual parts. Once the individual musical parts were collected, the composer and her husband stitched together the musical and visual elements using commercial editing software. The software allows you to adjust every pitch. You can stretch it, and you can adjust intonation. There is a healing quality to music, something that just transcends everything, one DMO member said. It doesn't matter if you're the one making it or appreciating it. There's just something about music that helps. The conductor adds, "We want to give some guidance on what to listen to as a way to cope with the virus situation. I know that many people are under a lot of stress, and I think music can certainly help." You can access the video at dmomusic.org. That's one word. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to question one, it was on this very day back in 1923 that an ordinance was passed in Michigan that did what? Was it A, forbid singing out of tune? That was a North Carolina law. That's why we're such great singers here in North Carolina, by the way. Was it answer B, forbid whistling on Sundays? Nope, but it is unlawful in Louisiana. Is it C, forbid dancing to the Star Spangled Banner? Well, actually, several states evidently felt compelled to ban musical gyrations to this danceable tune. Or was it D, forbid dancers from gazing into the eyes of their partners? Yes, Kalamazoo, Michigan. By the way, speaking of dancing laws, in Utah, the law requires that daylight be seen between two dancing partners. Salt Lake City, Utah, also has a law against carrying an unwrapped ukulele on the street. Must be a kind of like a gateway drug. First ukuleles, who knows what's next? How about rules for covering piano legs? Well, English author F. Marriott, upon visiting a girls' seminary in the U.S. in 1839, noted that Victorians covered the legs of the pianos with modest little trousers with frills at the bottom of them in order, as the headmistress stressed, to maintain the utmost purity of young ladies. As the author of the 1975 book, You Can't Eat Peanuts in Church and Other Little-Known Laws, Barbara Suling states, throughout our history, laws were enacted when needed as the country expanded. Many of them are still on the books. Some old laws were so quaint that to tamper with them seemed almost like a travesty. Others remained on the books simply because there was not enough time to go through all the legal steps to uncover and remove them. So they remained a monument to legal history rather than as rules to be enforced. We must assume there is or was a good reason for all these laws. Religious beliefs, customs, superstitions, power. Well, every offense imaginable seems to be described in detail by statute. In the criminal codes of the 50 states, there is enough info for a complete guidebook on how to commit crimes. Like the admonishment, don't put beans in your nose, though such laws might actually act more as suggestions than discouragements. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in which year that the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, began to manufacture the Victrola. Was it A, 1894, B, 1906, C, 1928, or D, 1940? Correct answer, answer B. It was on this day, back in 1906, that the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, began to manufacture the Victrola. The hand-cranked unit with horn cabinet sold for $200. Well, let's bid farewell to today's program with an Ashokan farewell. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.